Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, so call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Hey, good evening. Damn straight. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid, and oh my God. Thank God it's Monday. Super Bowl was kind of fun. Enjoyed that a little bit. Bless them Stillers hearts. Gotta say it that way, you know, Stillers. At any rate, it is Monday, and there is an abundance of stuff to talk about tonight. Any number of which you're free to bring up if you so desire. You heard the phone number there. Let's go over it again. 877-443-2366. And email's easy, too. I've told you before, bob@headonradio.com. Okay? You know, any way you care to get in touch, really, is fine by me. And sometime soon, we're going to add a new feature, and that is phone conversations via Skype. You know what Skype is, don't you? It's free internet telephony. Or, as we say up the hills and hollers here, telephony. Skype. You can get it for free, skype.com. Load it. If you want to reach the program via Skype, you can dial me in. I'm listed as Bob Kincaid. Easy, isn't it? No numbers, no nothing, just Bob Kincaid on Skype. And we did some experimenting with it over the weekend. Took Fourth Estate Radio. Took John Fox live in our good friend Bruce Birch's absence. He was busy with World Can't Wait and the protest in Washington. They got soaked by rain, but their spirits were high. And we're proud of what Bruce and the World Can't Wait people were able to accomplish on Saturday. But, no, where Skype is concerned, we had a marvelous, marvelous experience with it bringing a guy in Australia live through our board here in the wilds of wonderful West Virginia, our secure, undisclosed location. We had, it was a lot of fun. Now, obviously, it would seem to me that the place to start this evening would, of necessity, have to be the Gonzo hearings. Nah, we can't call torture boy Gonzalez Gonzo, can we? That's just disgusting. That's an insult to the very nature of Gonzo. Nah, I took Bruce Birch's name in vain a moment ago. He said his wife calls him El Torturador, the torturer. And he is all that, and ever so much more. But, the hearings today, El Torturador, Alberto Torquemada Gonzalez, appeared before the Senate Judiciary Committee. And, of course, you know, there was the usual tossing of softballs from creeps like John Cornyn and Jeff Sessions. I swear, if Jeff Sessions was holding a boot full of rainwater, he wouldn't have sense enough to pour it out if the directions was on the hill. God, he's dumb. You know, no wonder violent race crimes ran rampant while he was U.S. attorney or whatever it was in South Alabama. What a cretin. Mr. Gonzalez, You wouldn't spy on nobody less than Jesus told you to, would ye? Holy cow. Orrin Hatch, well, you know, we know what I think about Orrin Hatch. He needs to just quit the Senate and go find him a second or third or 13th wife or whatever. Because he's useless. Lindsey Graham, Republican, Republican of South Carolina, almost sounded like he was a little bit put out, but still, Mr. Attorney General. It does. I thank you for being here today, and you have given some wonderful, wonderful answers, and we just want to thank you for your wonderful answers that you've given here today. And, you know, I'm a little piqued by some of this overreaching that I do believe I see. However, if George Bush does tell me to, I will kiss his butt several times. Poor South Carolina. Saddled with Jim Demented. And Lindsey Graham for senators. Eesh. It's almost as bad as, well, Oklahoma, Texas, Kansas. Lots of states saddled with bad, bad senators. You know, here in West Virginia, we're just saddled with sellout senators. But the hearings were amazing. They almost got a little bit fiery from time to time. Even Arlen Specter. Even-handed Arlen Specter. Who, you know, wants to guffaw and giggle his way through the hearings. Even he got frustrated with Gonzalez. Asked early in the hearings, asked Gonzalez a straight-up question. And Gonzalez comes back and says,
"Well, I would like to commend the members of the Department of Justice. They are working very hard. You know, some have been working nights and weekends." And at that point, Specter looks at him and says, "Look, great, I'm glad, hurrah, but you didn't answer my question."
And thus began started at 9:30, went to 5:30, 5:45, 6 o'clock. My head hurts. My head hurts from listening to so much of Gonzalez and his filthy, blood-soaked lies. But it was one thing right after another, one thing right after another, one thing after another. And Gonzalez,
"Well, I am not at liberty to disclose operational details."
Jeez. Just pathetic. Just pathetic. And I've got some sound from it all today. There were some, you know, you've probably heard the Arlen Specter exchange. Russ Feingold and Patrick Leahy, Patrick Leahy took the pink tutu off and went after Gonzalez. And what was made abundantly clear today was that these punks in the Bush administration don't have a leg to stand on. Nothing.
"Well, we say that the president has these powers because we say he has these powers. See, don't ask us about him not having these powers, because we believe he has it." You know, it's the Tinkerbell administration again. We believe he is an all-powerful president.
And by the way, that's pretty much what Gonzalez sounds like.
He's an all-powerful president. He is invested with powers under the authorization for use of military force in Afghanistan. But even if he's not, he has inherent constitutional powers.
Jeez. The only thing missing, I was kind of surprised, Mrs. Gonzalez and the little Gonzalezes weren't in the hearing today. Why the hell not? I mean, I thought that's what you did if you were a Republican. You're such a stinking coward, you bring your wife and kids and sit them behind you there at the hearing so that if it gets particularly nasty, Lindsey Graham can apologize for the fact that you're a damn bigot. And then your wife can cry. And your kids can start smoking crack or snorting meth or something because of all the evil influences of the ferocious and mean and disrespectful Democrats. Kind of hard to say. Look, let's take a break. As I said, your phone calls are welcome. 877-443-2366. When we come back, of course, We'll have it, some more of this, and like I said, an abundance of stuff going on this evening, and you can pretty much bring to the table what you feel so inclined to bring. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
You put your keys between your knuckles. You walk in well-lit areas. Stay clear of parked vans. Someone approaches you and you cross to the other side of the street. Your cell phone is ready. The numbers for help saved on speed dial. You lock the door behind you. Once, twice, maybe three times. Now you feel safe, secure. You think you've made the right choices to protect yourself. Think again. Because if you're not making healthy choices, you could be one of the nearly 2 out of 3 women killed by cancer, diabetes, heart disease, or stroke. So eat right, get active, don't smoke, see your doctor, and live. Learn to protect yourself from yourself at 1-866-399-6789 or visit us at everydaychoices.org. A message from the American Cancer Society, American Diabetes Association, American Heart Association, and the Ad Council.
Hey, have you got a minute? I'm going to say a word. You tell me what comes to mind. Are you ready?
Okay.
Tchaikovsky.
Gesundheit. Okay, what's the word?
No, see, that is the word. What does Tchaikovsky make you think of?
I don't know. Allergy season?
Hey there, how you doing?
What's up?
Who's Martha Graham?
She invented the graham cracker.
No kidding.
Yeah. Before her, there was only soda crackers.
Hard to imagine. Hey, young lady.
Yeah?
Does the name Man Ray mean anything to you?
Duh. The Man Ray is a kind of poisonous jellyfish, and it lives in the Gulf of Mexico.
Aha.
It's very deadly.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Tchaikovsky's music, Martha Graham's dance, and Man Ray's photography. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
Welcome back.
It is time for you to laugh instead of crying.
Nah, where the Bush administration's concerned, I prefer the crying. And there was plenty of that today. Oh, for the chief law enforcement officer of the entire United States, Alberto Gonzalez is a whiny little so-and-so. Oh, he's just pathetic. All of this business, I can't talk about operational details. What possessed George Bush to ever nominate this guy in the first place? I have no idea. I have no idea whatsoever. But let's have a little listen, if you're okay with that. Let's have a little listen to, some telling, very much telling, segments from the hearing today. I want to start you with, Patrick Leahy, who is generally affable, but, just was in a foul temper today. God bless him and good for him. Just a simple question. Why wouldn't you tell the Congress about your dirty little domestic spying program. Why not?
We have both Republicans and Democrats on this committee, you know.
Yes, sir, I do know.
And
that.
This committee has given you twice under my chairmanship, we have given you 5 amendments to FISA because you requested it.
Yes,
but this,
I know.
You never came to us. Mr. Attorney General, can you see why I have every reason to believe we never would have found out about this if the press hadn't? Now, it's been talking about, well, let's go prosecute the press. Heavens. Thank God we have a press that at least tells us what the heck you guys are doing.
2.5 years.
You're obviously not telling us.
Sir, we have advised bipartisan leadership of the Congress and
yes,
the Intel
did.
Committees about this program.
Well,
we scared Jay Rockefeller so bad that he almost soiled himself.
The passage of the USA Patriot Act?
Sir, I don't recall when the first briefing occurred.
I don't recall. I just don't recall when the first briefing occurred.
Now, yeah, I thought Patrick Leahy was just a little bit over the top with the whole business. Thank God for a free press. Pat, buddy, could we talk? The New York Times sat on this story until after the November 2004 elections. I wouldn't get too worked up about singing their praises if I were you, buddy. But the fact of the matter does remain, doesn't it, that the Alberto Gonzalez just sort of sat on the whole process. They wanted to go on spying on Americans and all. You know, we advised the Congress. Doggone it, we did. It was like having Stuart Smalley testify. You remember Stuart Smalley, Al Franken character? And doggone it, I feel good about it. That's where it was. This just, it boggled my mind. We actually almost had some cross-examination today. Some people were just mean to the Attorney General, and he's so sweet. I don't know how they possibly could do that. But time after time, the questions were put to him. Leahy, now this is a long clip, this is about a minute. But, you know, we'll get through it. Because, look, you know, we're liberals, we're Democrats, we're progressives. We are intelligent people. We're not like the other side. You don't have to have your sound bites 10 seconds at a time. You can take them in 1-minute chunks. And that's what I've got for you here, because this is a hell of an exchange. And this, frankly, not the Arlen Specter, you know, won't you answer the question, please, pretty please, sir. This is the signature sound bite from these hearings today.
If the president believed the program was necessary and legally justified, why did he cut it? Why did he shut it down?
Sir, you're asking me about the operations of the program.
Of course. I'm sorry, Mr. Attorney General. I forgot you can't answer any questions that might be relevant to this. Well, if the president has that authority, does he also have the authority to wiretap Americans' domestic calls and emails? Under this, let me finish.
Yeah,
under this authority, if he feels it involves Al Qaeda activity, I'm talking about within this country. Under this authority you've talked about, does he have the power, under your authority, to wiretap Americans within the United States if they're involved in Al Qaeda activity?
Sir, I've been asked this question several times.
I know, and you've had somewhat of a vague answer, so I'm asking again.
And I've said that presents a different legal question, a tough, possibly tough constitutional question.
Possibly tough.
And I am not comfortable just off the cuff talking about whether or not such activity would in fact be constitutional. I will
a little
say
monster.
That is not what we're talking about here. That is
are you
not
doing
what
that?
The president has authorized.
Are you doing that?
Are you doing it?
That is not what the president has authorized.
Are you doing that?
With this program.
Are you doing that?
Are you doing that? Are you spying on the American people, Bertie? Of course you're spying on the American people. Because we have to remember that George Bush fears the American people more than he fears. Well, he fears a lot of things. Poor guy's just scared to death. He's not a chimpanzee. Chimpanzees are kind of mean. He's a timid little bunny rabbit. He's scared of, you know, a little rabbit. They sit there, you know, in garden season, and they get into my garden and stuff, but they sit there in the clover with their little noses twitching and their little ears going back and forth, listening for everything. They want to hear everything. That's why they've got those big ears. That's George Bush. Stop with the chimpanzee comparison. I think it was Bart Kopp who first started calling him President Bunny Pants. Not even Bunny Pants. He's a bunny. He's a rabbit. He is a timid, terrified, cowardly little rabbit. And all he's ever known how to do all his life is run. Run in abject terror and fear. And he is scared to death of the American people. He is scared to death of the possibility that the American people might catch up with his little scheme to destroy this nation. Because that is, after all, his goal. We know that. You know that. I know that. Smart people, progressives, Democrats. We know that! Are you doing that, Attorney General Gonzalez? Are you doing it? Are you spying on people's email? Yeah, domestically. Are you listening in on phone calls domestically? Are you doing that? Are you doing that? Are you doing that? Leahy asked him at time after time after time, are you doing that? I can't answer that question. I'm sorry. I can't answer that question. And if you ask me, are you doing that one more time, I think I'm going to cry. Of course they're doing that. Why do you think that they knew every move that John Kerry was going to make before John Kerry made it in the 2004 election cycle? Huh? I mean, just apply some common sense to this. I saw this in an email somewhere today. Do you realize that by virtue of this domestic spying program, do you realize that we've just given a huge tool to the terrorists? Of course we have. Of course we have. What have we given them? We have given them the ability to terrorize us with a telephone book.
When I woke up this morning, things were looking bad.
All Al-Qaeda has to
do, total silence was the only,
is hire a telemarketing firm. And the NSA will be so busy they'll never be able to figure anything out. My God. Let's take a break. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
No fun. But fortunately, I have the key to escape reality. And you may see me tonight with an illegal smile. It don't cost very much, but it lasts a long while. Won't you please tell the man I didn't kill anyone? No, I'm just trying to have me some fun.
Those are made using child labor in sweatshops. I wrote a letter to the company saying, reconsider your labor practices. A few months later, I get a letter back saying thanks for being a loyal customer, and they included a coupon for a 25% discount on their jeans. So I got smart and wrote letters every day to all the stores that carry the brand, asking them to stop supporting the companies who use child labor in sweatshops. And I just kept getting letters back thanking me for my concerns and more coupons for more discounts on more jeans. So I'm telling my friend about it, and she flips out saying that between all the letters and coupons, some paper company cut down a small forest, driving off two indigenous tribes, hundreds of endangered animals, killing thousands of plant species, some of which may have contained vaccines for HIV, cancer, and syphilis. Meanwhile, the guys cutting down the trees are 13-year-old kids who work night and day for months just to save up enough money to buy a pair of jeans made by child labor in sweatshops.
Saving the world isn't easy, but saving a life is. Just one pint of blood can save up to 3 lives. Visit bloodsaves.com to learn more. This public service announcement was brought to you by the Ad Council.
When you have a stroke, you may not even notice it right away. But then, time passes, and the symptoms get worse. One minute you feel fine, and the next, your speech could be slurred or not make sense. One side of your body might become numb. You might see double. You drop the TV remote because you can't hold up your arm. That's because after a stroke, every minute you don't get help is another minute that your brain is being starved of oxygen. The warning signs of a stroke include sudden numbness or weakness of the face, arm, or leg, sudden trouble seeing, speaking, or understanding. If you experience any of these warning signs, call 911 immediately, because time lost is brain lost. Visit strokeassociation.org or call 1-888-4-STROKE today. A public service announcement from the American Stroke Association and the Ad Council.
Giving all you love to just one man. You'll have bad times, he'll have good times, doing things that you don't understand. But if you love him, you forgive him, even though he's hard to understand. And if you love him, oh, be proud of him, 'cause after all, he's just a man.
Alberto Gonzalez theme song.
Stand by your man.
Just charming, isn't it? That's what you like. A real simpering, pathetic, torture-loving attorney general. I mean, you really want that out of an attorney general, don't you? No, you don't. You want somebody that knows a little bit of law. You want somebody that loves the Constitution. These guys despise the Constitution. Russ Feingold said it so well in the hearings today. He said, you know, we Democrats have been accused of having a pre-9/11 mindset. He said, I think the problem we've got here is that George Bush has a pre-1776 mindset. And he does, doesn't he? He most assuredly does. He wants to be a king. He wants to be a king. That's just pathetic. Oh, speaking of kings, oh, no. Yeah. No, this is, I hope you didn't have your dinner too recently, because this is going to make it a little tough to keep it down. Dear Leader has had a change in plans. Saturday, the Bush administration, the White House, announced that Dear Leader is going to forego a trip to New Hampshire, where he would he was expected to talk about why we really, really, really have to kill Social Security and Medicare in order to defeat the terrorists. No, instead of that, nah, he's going to go to Coretta Scott King's funeral tomorrow. Blech. What's more, it appears that he's even going to speak at Coretta Scott King's funeral at New Birth Missionary Baptist Church. And frankly, I'm disappointed. I'm disappointed in whoever was setting up that funeral, because that filthy little man has no right whatsoever to speak at her funeral, and to do so demeans every minute, every second of her entire life's work and that of her husband. Just another moment in what I've described as, you know, getting Dr. King back in the ghetto, turning Dr. King into a little black Santa Claus. But he's going to be there. Something like 25,000 people surrounded the Georgia State House in Atlanta on Saturday to pay their last respects to Mrs. King. Scott McClellan said that the change had been made because the funeral arrangements were only very recently finalized. All these simpering little twits in the Bush administration. We will probably have sound from that tomorrow, and I don't know if I'm going to be able to stand to play it for you. But yeah, let's get back to the business at hand, though. And a reminder, the phone number, you know the phone number, 877, the number 4, head on, 877-443-2366. Learn it, know it, use it, if you feel so inclined. But, you've heard the central soundbite. And that is Senator Patrick Leahy of Vermont repeatedly asking Bertie Gonzalez, torture boy, el torturador, Alberto Torquemada Gonzalez, asking him, are you doing that? Are you spying on the American people? I can't answer that. Because if I answered that, I'd have to, and if I had to, well, I'm not really under oath, am I? No, did you know that? He wasn't under oath today. What is it? Why can't a Republican be under oath? Are they allergic to them? Is it, I mean, does their hand start burning if they put it on the Bible? I suspect so. But no, we couldn't put the Attorney General of the United States, for God's sakes, we couldn't put him under oath.
Because, you know, he'll tell us the truth, really. I mean, he's the Attorney General. We can trust him. I mean, there's never been an Attorney General get in trouble in the United States. I mean, John Mitchell never went to prison or anything.
But on round two, Senator Feingold, Russ Feingold, Wisconsin, arguably a presidential hopeful and one who made some bones today in my book. By virtue of being willing to take this man who said it's not torture unless it causes organ failure or death, said that, really, really said that, taking him to task for his lies. And he did it, and frankly, Feingold did everything but stand up and point at him and yell, J'accuse!
Not the policy or the agenda of this president to authorize actions that would be in contravention of our criminal statutes. And when you said that, you knew about this program. In fact, you just told me that you had approved it and you were aware of the legal analysis to justify it.
Way back
you
when.
Wanted this committee and the American people to think that this kind of program was not going on. But it was, and you knew that. And
Senator,
I think that's unacceptable.
Senator, your question was whether or not the president had authorized conduct in violation of law. And
my
I laid out
whether the
I
president, have, Mr. Attorney General, my question was whether the president would have the power to do that.
And he still didn't answer the question. But the point is, Alberto Gonzalez knew when he was appearing and testifying, at least under oath then, about his intentions for, you know, wanting to be Attorney General of the United States. He was asked these questions, and now it comes back. Well, you know, it was a hypothetical question.
It was a hypothetical, so, you know, I really didn't have to answer it.
Now, I have to tell. Well, no, I shouldn't. Never mind. So, one last time here. One last soundbite, and then we're done with our hearing soundbites for the day. After all of his disgusting dancing, after all of his machinations, Russ Feingold finally got what appeared to me to be a little bit disgusted with Torture Boy.
You were misleading this committee. You could have answered the question truthfully. You could have told the committee that, yes, in your opinion, the president has that authority. By simply saying the truth, that you believe the president has the power to wiretap Americans without a warrant, would not have exposed any classified information. And my question wasn't whether such illegal wiretapping was going on. Like almost everyone in Congress, I didn't know, of course, about the program then. It wasn't even about whether the administration believed that the president has this authority. It was a question about your view of the law, about your view of the law, during a confirmation on your nomination to be Attorney General. So, of course, if you had told the truth, maybe that would have jeopardized your nomination. You wanted to be confirmed. And so you let a misleading statement about one of the central issues of your confirmation, your view of executive power, stay on the record until the New York Times revealed the program.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, he did, Senator. And see, us liberals, you know, us wacky left-wingers, we knew he was lying. We tried to scream it from the housetops. Well, we don't have many housetops. We don't have, that much ability to get the word out. But we told who we could tell he's lying. That's why he brought his wife and his kids to sit back there behind him during the confirmation hearings. Because, honest to God, they do that to intimidate the senators. Because, you know, you don't want to get too rough in front of the kids. You don't want to look at the guy and say, are you kidding me? You don't think it's torture unless it causes organ failure and death? Stand up, little Gonzalez boy, and let's bring out the battery cables. Nah, you can't do that. That's cover, isn't it? It's exactly what that is. But Russ Feingold made it abundantly clear that Alberto Gonzalez committed perjury during his confirmation hearings because he was asked directly about his opinion of presidential powers, and he, you know, this guy didn't just walk in out of the rain. He'd been White House counsel for 4 freaking years. He knew about the spying program. He knew about the domestic spying. He knew every sordid, filthy, unconstitutional detail about the spying program when he had his confirmation hearings. Yes, Lord, yes, he knew. And knowing, he said nothing. Not a blessed word. He lied. He actively lied during his confirmation hearings. Now, let me, let's see. Lying under oath, lying under oath. What do you do about, wasn't there, I did not have sex with that woman, Miss Lewinsky. Yeah,
isn't that what the wingnuts said? They said it wasn't about sex, it was about perjury. Wasn't that the argument?
Isn't that what Alberto Gonzalez has committed? Not today, mind you, because we couldn't be troubled to put him under. He was asked questions during his confirmation that had he been honest, he would have given different answers to.
I was under a strict oath of secrecy.
Now wait a minute. So national, that's gonna be the argument. Now, I mean, you know that's gonna be the argument. The argument is gonna be that if you've been sworn to secrecy on something, you have to lie about it, baby. You have to. That's where we are now. This is their vision of government. Are you comforted by that? I should hope not. But it kind of would be nice to see, maybe Special Prosecutor Fitzgerald could get hold of this perjury case. Dadgummit, if only it involved some sex. and a couple of Democrats. Boy, we'd be having a high old time tonight, wouldn't we? John Cornyn and Lindsey Graham and that weirdo religious freak brown bag or brown broke back whatever from Kansas, they'd be swinging from the rafters, screeching for a prosecution. But instead, it's just another day with another damn dirty Republican. So, we'll give him a pass. What the heck? I mean, I've got a list here of notes I made during the hearings. Specter, why not use FISA? My note here, no answer given. And then the question came up, and the deference. This is the Congress. They are co-equal to the president. They are not subservient. This is not a monarchy where the monarch can merely dissolve the legislative body on a whim. And I saw two or three senators today say, Mr. Attorney General, would it be okay with you if we called former Attorney General Ashcroft to come in here and testify? I mean, that is, if he can get all the anointing oil off of his head in time.
A little turpentine will do fine with that.
Would you mind? Would President Bush mind? Or would he come in here and like, accuse us of being obstructionists?
That's what... Questions from Senator Specter about whether or not all of this legal mumbo-jumbo was crafted before or after the NSA program started. See, that's the thing. That's the way these crooks operate. First, they do the dirty work, and then they start working backwards. It's like reverse engineering. You start with a done thing, and then you work backwards to try to come up with an excuse. And you wind up with things like unitary executive.
Well, George Bush started this spying program because he's a unitarian executive.
They begged him to show them the specific language. You know, maybe, I don't know, maybe this issue tires you. Maybe there's other stuff out there to talk about. But I was in this filth all day long. I mean, till my eyeballs began to burn from just watching. You know, you'd pay attention to Leahy, pay attention to Specter, because Specter seemed a little bit chapped about this. Pay attention to Feingold, Kennedy, Schumer, and then, you know, you'd watch people like Cornyn and Graham and the Brown Bagger put on their knee pads and go do for Gonzalez what Monica did for Bill. And that was just disgusting. I got to where I was turning the recorder off during all that. I could not. Jeff Sessions. And then, you know, questions like, Attorney General Gonzalez, are all the intercepts you've made, are they all of terrorists? I can't discuss operational details. He was willing to go to these hearings because he knew that he wasn't going to be forced to say anything. I know some of you share my angst about just exactly where and what America is now. How much secrecy does this nation need? I submit to you, not that much. We don't need that much secrecy. In America, an open society is our best defense against the terrorists. Wide open. Because an open society tends not to tolerate a whole bunch of secrecy. Talk about everything. Discuss it with your neighbors. Have conversations. Talk to the cabbie. And you know what? You'll learn a lot more than if we run around with our hands over our ears and duct tape over our mouth, trying not to be hit by the terrorists.
I don't understand why that's so hard to figure out. During Jeff Sessions' questioning at on the tape at 1 hour, 8 minutes, and 30 seconds, I've got a note. Sessions kisses Gonzalez's butt. At 105.50, or 109.50. Do you have a question, Senator Sessions? This guy, you know, that should have just put him behind the table with Gonzalez because he just wanted to talk. He didn't want to ask any questions. Mainly, probably, I guess, because any questions he would have asked would have been damning, because there's no getting around what... It's official now, okay? All you liberals, all you Democrats, all you progressives, all you decent human beings who have for, you know, 5 long years now said, look, George Bush is crooked, and his whole cabal is crooked, and his whole dirty crowd is crooked. You can run out into the yards and scream, see, we were right. Because today proved that they are crooks. Let's go back to that for a second. Just listen to this one more time.
Legally justified. Why did he cut it? Why did he shut it down?
Sir, you're asking me about the operations of the program.
Of course. I'm sorry, Mr. Attorney General. I forgot you can't answer any questions that might be relevant to this. Well, if the president has that authority, does he also have the authority to wiretap Americans' domestic calls and emails under this? Let me finish. Under this authority, if he feels it involves al-Qaeda activity. I'm talking about within this country, under this authority you've talked about, does he have the power, under your authority, to wiretap Americans within the United States if they're involved in al-Qaeda activity?
Sir, I've been asked this question several times.
You've had somewhat of a vague answer, so I'm asking again.
And I've said that presents a different legal question, a tough, possibly tough constitutional question, and I am not comfortable just off the cuff talking about whether or not such activity would in fact be constitutional. I will say that is not what we're talking about here. That is
are you
not
doing
what
that?
The president has authorized.
Are you doing that?
I can't give you assurances. That is not what the president has authorized.
Are you doing that?
With this program.
Are you doing that?
I can't give you an off-the-cuff answer because that's a tough constitutional question. Did that sink in? I mean, are you right there with that right now? That's a tough constitutional question. In Alberto Gonzalez's world, it is a tough constitutional question to try to decide on the fly, in a hurry, whether or not the President of the United States can simply, off the top of his head, order the rest of the government to spy on people's mail, their email, or listen in on their conversations. That's a tough constitutional question for Alberto Gonzalez. Here. I guess I'm not nearly as smart as Alberto Gonzalez, but let me just try, I just want to try this for myself. Mr. Kincaid, do you believe it's possible, do you believe the president has the authority to order spying on people, American citizens' email and phone conversations? Do you believe he has that? No! No, I don't believe he has that authority. I've read the Fourth Amendment. No warrant shall issue but upon probable cause. Now, in that hypothetical, there wasn't a blessed word about probable cause. Does the president have that authority? No! No, not in any way, shape, form, or fashion does he have that authority. You can't just say,
Fourth Amendment, we don't need a thinking Fourth Amendment.
It's there. It's not Tinkerbell. It's not something you gotta believe in. It's not an article of faith for the faith-based community. It's real, and it's law, and this is a nation of laws and not of men. But Alberto Gonzalez says that's a tough constitutional question. That's the thing about constitutional questions. A whole bunch of them are real freaking easy. Just read the document. There's nothing in the Constitution about a unitary executive. There's nothing in the Constitution about presidents being able to just throw the Fourth Amendment out the window. It is not there. But you see, these Republican weasels hate America. And more than anything else, they hate the Constitution. It gets in their way. It's not something to be revered and cherished and guarded like they swear to. It's something to be got around. Now, when we come back in the next hour, from the Associated Press, from Friday, didn't get to it in Friday's show. An intense debate erupted during former U.S. President Gerald Ford's administration over the president's powers to eavesdrop without warrants to gather foreign intelligence newly disclosed government documents revealed. Guess who the principal players were? You know who the principal players were. There were three of them, just like there were three Stooges. Rummy and Cheney and Daddy Bush. It's context, sunshine. It's context. What Alberto Gonzalez said in front of the Senate Judiciary Committee this afternoon was nothing new. This crap has been coming for a long, long, long time. They've been mad about it since Nixon. No kidding. They have been mad about it since Nixon because they feel like they got their fun taken away from them with Richard Nixon. That mean old Congress. Because you have heard the business from the interview with David Frost, right? The one with Richard Nixon from 1977. If the president does it, it can't be illegal. You've heard that, right? He said that. And that's not just something they talk about at their little graft, filthy, political, pack money cocktail parties. That's an article of faith. If the president does it, it can't be illegal. Well, except for oral sex. Except for Monica Lewinsky. Except for Democrats in the White House. If the president does it, it can't be illegal. My God. I can't believe that these people, that I share a country with them. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Living in the wasteland of the free. Jesus, too.
with unemployment to be able to shut me soon. Follow the fear in Huntsville, putting people on the moon. So I took to running numbers for this man I used to know. And I sell a few narcotics, and I sell a little blow. I ain't getting rich now, but I'm getting more than fine. Tough to make a living, but a man's just gotta try. If I died in Culver County, would it make the evening news? But you're busy blowing rockets, you people on the moon.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Hey, welcome back. I am Bob. It is a Liberal Sandbox. Get in. Fuss, fight, fume. Get it out of your system. Bees out from under your bonnet. Burrs out from under your saddle. Yeah, kind of like a little West Virginia knife fight with the bar fight without the guns and knives and all the nastiness. We're liberals. We're Democrats. We're progressives. We can take a little. Look, we're not afraid to get our noses bloody and our knuckles barked. Time to fight back. Our good friend Hubert wrote in during the break. You guys are wonderful. Creative. Attorney General C.D. Gonzalez. I think that one's going to stick. Attorney General C.D. Gonzalez. And, you know, Hubert understands. He said, you know, in a country with nothing to hide, let it all hang out. If this nation was the nation that George Washington envisioned when he said, avoid foreign entanglements, we wouldn't be spying now, would we? No, we wouldn't. We wouldn't be spying. At least not on our own people. You know, other countries bear watching. Far be it from me to suggest otherwise. But we have to spy on our own people. I forget which senator it was today I heard talking about fifth columnists. He said, you know, there are always going to be people in America that agree with our enemies. Do you see what a number they do? Do you see what a job they do with the reframing? Disagreeing with Bush constitutes agreeing with Osama. Are you kidding? If I or any other liberal could get anywhere near Osama with a Louisville slugger, you think we wouldn't beat his head into just a bloody gray mess? And enjoy every last whack of it? I want the man caught. I want him paraded in absolute humiliation and shame right down Broadway in New York City to Ground Zero, and I want him garroted there. But I'm mean because, you know, I'm one of those liberal, mean people. Well, you know, it's like, what's his name? The Republican National Committee chairman who lives in that log closet, Ken Melman.
I don't know what it is about her, but Hillary Clinton just has so much anger.
Really, he did.
She has so much anger. I don't know what it's about, this anger.
just slaughters me. Just slays me. Let's go to the phones. I have no idea who's on it, but we're going to find out real quick. See, Agnes is at basketball practice with the kids. Hey, you're head on. Who have I got?
This is Ed.
Hey, Ed. How you doing?
All right, Bob. How are you?
I'm pretty good.
Are you on the air tonight?
Oh, heck yeah.
Okay, I didn't know it. I was just going to...
We're gonna get you hooked up with that computer yet, Ed.
Okay. I was going to listen in if you didn't care. I called in a while ago and couldn't get no answer.
No, I was kind of ranting away and didn't have the free hand to hit the button with. Tell you what, I'll throw you on hold and you can listen, all right?
All righty. Thanks.
All right. Stand by. That's our buddy Ed. And we gotta get Ed hooked up. I mean, just he's had some stuff going on, but gotta get that computer hooked up. Because I know he's gonna enjoy it so much more than listening on hold. All right, and well, oh, there went line two. Well, so what? But no, going back in time, a little time travel here, real quick. Former President George Bush, current Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld, and Vice President Dick Cheney are cited in the documents. I told you about these before the top of the hour. The roughly 200 pages of historic records reflect a remarkably similar dispute. No, really. You're kidding. You mean that Cheney and Rumsfeld and Bush were making the same arguments 30 years ago that they're making today? Really? You wouldn't lie to me now, would you, Associated Press? You mean that they haven't changed in all these many, many years? You mean that they're still the dirty, filthy, rotten little, war criminals? That they were all those years ago? You mean that tigers don't change their stripes and neither do skunks? Yogi Berra was right. It's deja vu all over again, said Tom Blanton, executive director of the U.S. National Security Archives, a private research group that compiles collections of sensitive government documents. It's the same debate, he said. Now, here's what George Bush said. He was director of the CIA once upon a time. You know, isn't that curious? That's back when he was forging his early alliances with the Bin Laden family, oddly enough. Bush wanted to ensure no unnecessary diminution of collection of important foreign intelligence under the proposal, which was FISA, to require judges to approve terror wiretaps. He said that in March 1976. He also complained, get this, this is the real gem. This is the pearl under the oyster. He also whined that some major communications companies were unwilling to install government wiretaps without a judge's approval. This is 1976. We had just, the 2 years previous, a year and a half previous, we had gotten rid of Richard Nixon for these very same reasons. And in 1976, George H.W. Bush, bailout Bush, was whining that the phone company wouldn't install wiretaps for them without a warrant. They haven't changed a lick. Leopards don't change their spots, and skunks don't change their stripes. Then, a man named Jack Marsh, a White House advisor, alerted Gerald Ford. I've got a whip inflation now button for you. When? To objections by Bush as CIA director and Rumsfeld former Secretary of State Henry Kissinger and Brent Scowcroft. The names don't none of this is going to change until these evil old freaks finally die. natural deaths. Not advocating anything. Kissinger, Scowcroft, Rumsfeld, Bush, Cheney. Unlike the current administration, the Ford administration never claimed the right to violate a law requiring judicial oversight of wiretaps in foreign intelligence investigations if Congress were to pass such a law. Here's the secret, though. They didn't like that law worth a tinker's damn. Bush hated it. Rummy hated it. Cheney hated it. Mercy. And ain't nothing different. Same old, same old. Hey, you're head on. Who have I got?
Bob.
What's up?
Oh, I just thought I'd... let you know that why we're going down the tube so fast.
Okay.
Polls show many Americans are simply dumber than Bush by Paul Craig Roberts.
Oh, well, yeah, I think I saw that.
Yeah. And, you know, these are polls, you know, that people actually done some work on. And, yeah, it's kind of frightening. It really is. I mean, if I'm dumber than George Bush, God help me.
Yeah. Hey, Bob, you need to do me a favor. Turn down whatever that is in the background.
Oh, I got it. It's muted right now. There it's gone. Does that help some?
I hope so, yeah.
I got you on the computer. It's the only way.
Right. Yeah.
Anyway, Paul Craig Roberts has got out. It's just stunning. I mean, I'm looking at it and thinking, okay, that's why I have difficulty discussing issues with people of that persuasion.
Well, and you know, they're and this is where they start calling us elitists. But at what point in time, or where do you draw the line, Bob, between being an elitist versus being a realist? And in this particular instance, I think it's realistic for us to say that, you know, in trying to discuss this with the other side, we are, by definition, discussing it with somebody who doesn't have a clue.
Hmm.
You know, Fox Network, the really gross and suggestive shows that they run that the right wing complains about, Republicans watch them more than Democrats by like 2 and 3 to 1. They don't know what's going on in America. They listen to Rush Limbaugh for 15, 20 minutes in the car, and they feel like they are updated and well-informed.
Hmm. Well, there was a gentleman back a few years ago. His name was Chesty Pullard. He was a Marine's Marine, and he died. And, you know, he said a pretty simple thing. He said, I'm as common as dirt. But, you know, dirt has a purpose on this planet. You know, I can go out there in my garden, till it up, and I can plant something worthwhile in there, you know, a seed. It'll grow.
Sure.
And it'll become something useful. But, you see, commonality, just being common, not elitist, and, you know, it's the other side that has this elitist kind of mentality, okay? It's not the common man. It's not the common anything. It's not the commons, as Tom Hartman likes to call it, that belong to all of us, not just Republicans, not Democrats, just the human.
I understand that, Bob, but if we leave it to these Republicans,
no.
There's not going to be any common anything left to any of us.
That's what I'm trying to say. You see, they have no common sense. They have no common decency. They have nothing in common with us. And so, therefore, you're dealing with what? something less than dirt. You're dealing with the scum that's on the top of the pond.
Pond scum, sure.
Yeah, and what do you do with pond scum? You skim it off.
And you get rid of it.
Right, you get rid of it. And that's what we have to do with the Republican Party. It is a useless and something so, you know, it takes the sunlight out of everything. It does nothing but hurt. So I'm asking that people realize that they're not dumber than Bush. They've been dumbed down by a system that is set up to dumb them down. And it's time that they all wake up. I loved what you guys did this last weekend. I listened to India and I thought, God, Bob's on. He's in Australia.
Yeah, wasn't that wild?
It was wonderful. It really was. It was, you know, and then, yeah.
Bless his heart, once we got John Fox breathing, you know, I thought we were going to get through it. For a while there, I thought we were going to have to, you know, FedEx him a brown paper bag to hyperventilate into. I love him to death.
I was hoping he could get up off the floor after he fell off his stool. But, you know, it was wonderful because, you know, we're reaching out with common sense across the planet. And, you know, there are good people in that party. They're just overwhelmed with the nonsense.
Well, they've got when you get right down to it, Bob, I'm glad you mentioned it that way. When you get right down to it, we've talked about the job that we have to do here in the Democratic Party. And we've got a tall order to deal with to take our party back and lead it away from the Bush Lights and the Liebermans and the Byrds and that kind of thing. That's a heck of a job we've got on our hands. I feel sorry for you know, and God knows they're a minority, so that makes it even tougher for them. I feel sorry for the so-called principled Republicans because they've got to take their party back from a bunch of spitting mean religious fanatics, and they've got to take their party back from a bunch of corporatist creeps.
And
they've got a hell of a taller order than what we got.
And we have to take a party back from a few just like them. We call them Dinos. We call them names.
Yeah, DLC Democrats.
Yeah, and DLC Democrats. We call them all kinds of names. But what they are is people out of touch with the commonality of man, of all of us. Every human being, every man, woman, and child on this planet have a great deal in common. And we don't actually have a grasp on, well, whatever it may be, that we're going to. Some people think the switch goes off, poof, the lights go out, and you're gone. Other people believe that, bingo, they're going to be sitting on a cloud with sipping mint juleps with,
Jesus,
I don't know, Judy who? Garland?
Yeah.
Somewhere over the rainbow?
No.
The only thing I can say to you is this. Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain.
Ain't that the truth? Hey, Bob, I got to hit it. We got a break coming up.
Get her done. Hey, I appreciate the... Well, I wasn't going to call, and then... Yeah.
That's okay.
I better because... People have to realize that, you know, the polls, I mean, these are tests they run out there and they come up. People, many Americans are simply dumber than Bush. And that scares the living bejeebers out of me. But get your break done. I'm going to listen to it on the catch up and I'll download you from Ben because he's a good man. I send him a stipend every month.
Well, bless your heart, Bob. He needs it. Hardest working man in liberal talk radio, that's for sure.
Well, he's also just about as crazy as you and me. Because he keeps fighting for the good thing. If we wasn't so dang crazy, we'd just roll over and join that other bunch.
I can't stand the thought of that. I just can't stand it.
I couldn't imagine. No. It would never happen. But enjoy your break, and I'll get some ice for your root beer this time.
All right. Take care, Bob.
We'll see you later. Bye-bye.
Later. You know, that Bob brings up the issue of fixing the party. And if you're interested in that issue, I'd like to recommend a book to you. I've got it in my hands here. It's a series of essays and, you know, thoughts. It's edited by Matthew R. Kerbel. It's called Get This Party Started. And it has essays from, and it's called How Progressives Can Fight Back and Win. Get This Party Started. Go to Ben's site there at whiterosesociety.org. He's got a couple of bookseller links. Go through that. I think they give him like 2.5 cents on a book or something. So, you know, help out that way. Get This Party Started, How Progressives Can Fight Back and Win, edited by Matthew R. Kerbel. There are essays in there from Alan Abramowitz, not Jack Abramoff, Alan Abramowitz, Chris Bowers, E.J. Dionne, Anna Greenberg, John Halpin, Craig Holman, David Kuznet, George Lakoff, John Podesta, Amy Sullivan, Zephyr Teachout, Jim Wallace, John Kenneth White. If you want to, and I've read it. It's a pretty solid little manual for just exactly how we need to start thinking and how we need to start organizing and how we need to start getting back at, where we need to be. So what do you say we do that? Coming up, we've got our Cup of Joe report. You know what this is, of course. This is Head On. You know how to reach the show, 877-443-2366. Bob@headonradio.com. We'll be back.
Chewing on a piece of grass, walking down the road. Tell me, how long you gonna stay here, Joe? Some people say this town don't look good in snow. You don't care, I know. Venture a highway in the sunshine, where the days are longer, the nights are stronger than moonshine. You're gonna go, I know.
Hey friends, Eric Estrada here. Just like you, I'm really into engines, but there's something else that I'm into even more. Taking care of the planet. I bet you didn't know that motor oil from one oil change dumped in a drain or on the ground can contaminate 1 million gallons of fresh water. That means that if we don't recycle it, we could be drinking it. So take your used oil to your nearest recycling center or call toll-free 1-800-CLEANUP. Remember, if you dump it, you'll drink it.
Want to fight childhood asthma? Then fight it with a scrub brush and a hot soapy towel. Even in the neatest and tidiest homes, if there's so much as a crumb to eat or a drop to drink, household pests like bugs and mice will do all that they can to get it. Creepy crawlies like bugs and mice are unpleasant enough as it is, but they're more than just a nuisance for kids with asthma because they can actually trigger an asthma attack. So, give them a whole lot of nothing. Sweep up crumbs, wipe down tables, scrub dishes before they pile up in the sink, and store leftovers in plastic bags or bowls. Don't leave them so much as one tidbit or nibble, and you can stop a childhood asthma attack before it starts. Discover other simple ways to prevent an asthma attack. Call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS or visit noattacks.org, because no child should feel like a fish out of water. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. EPA, the Ad Council, and this station.
Dad, can I ask you something?
Sure.
There's this girl I kind of like.
Say no more.
You just have to impress her. Okay, but how?
Just
I don't know, pick up a lot of heavy things around her.
Like what?
You know, desks, chairs, people. Grunt if you have to.
Grunt?
Yeah, be like, There you go.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. When you adopt a child from foster care, just being there makes all the difference. To learn more, call 1-888-200-4005. A public service announcement brought to you by Adopt U.S. Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
It's the Cup of Joe Report. I'm Joe Vecchio. Ben Birch of the White Rose Society has another fundraiser going on. Ben does fantastic work in archiving numerous radio shows, including the Cup of Joe show done by yours truly. I'm not bringing that up just because I'd like you to make a donation, which, of course, I do, but to highlight once again the problems we face on the left. Yes, that means I'm going to get all negative again. A big reason why the right now dominates the message in this country is that years ago, they threw a lot of money into creating media outlets to have their voices heard. Through a combination of corporate money and money from financiers such as Richard Mellon Scaife, they bought radio stations, newspapers and magazines, and otherwise spread the wealth around. But that's not what we do. People like Ben and myself are forced to beg for donations because the money pockets on the left are stingier with their wallets than any Scrooge. Where the right will put $1 million into some new venture and give people the freedom to run things, the left will hand out $50,000 and demand accountability for every penny. We seem to think that there's something wrong with earning a buck while fighting for the cause, and that's just plain garbage. As I've said before, there's no dignity in poverty, and no amount of money is going to protect the wealthiest people on the left if the right should gain the kind of power they want. It's way past time they started to put up or be shut up, because if we go, they go too. Now, get back to work. This has been the Cup of Joe Report by Joe Vecchio. Listen to the Cup of Joe radio show, available via streaming audio at cupojoe.blogspot.com.
I do like Mondays. I love Mondays. Monday's my favorite day of the week, beyond a shadow of a doubt. Because those 2 days of silence, Saturday and Sunday, No, they don't just wear me out. They wear the whole family out because I keep doing. See, I keep doing the show because stuff keeps coming into my email box, and I live in a perpetual state of, oh my God, I can't believe this. You know the article there. Same crap, different decade. 30 years these Republicans have been, you know, trying to convince the world that if they just get, not the world, just America, just trying to convince America that if only they get to spy on the people a little bit more, that somehow we will finally, yea, verily, be safe. Is that how it works? I don't think that's how it works. I think we're safe when we are an informed electorate. Don't you? I mean, does that kind of make sense? But 30 years of Rumsfeld and Cheney and all these cretins trying to turn this constitutional republic, this republic based upon principles of democracy, trying to turn it into... Okay, I'll go a fascist dictatorship. And in large part, succeeding now, beyond any shadow of a doubt. George Bush gets away with his little spying plan. We're done. Because let's be clear about this. I've joked about, oh, you know, let's go ahead and let George Bush have this because we're going to enjoy the heck out of it when Hillary's president. And, you know, we're going to spy on all you little right-wing weirdos and we're going to have a blast. I don't want that to happen. I don't want that to happen at all, ever. But we are in desperate—we are in dire risk of it actually, you know, transpiring, taking place. Now, apparently, you know, Groundhog Day was last week, so Bionic Dick Cheney is out and about. Our good friend Chris in Alabama wrote to let me know, this is one of those oh my God kind of things, tonight, as we speak, you and I, as we chat in the Tom Hartman chat room and as we exchange our emails and as I sit here behind this microphone and you sit there with your speakers on sharing the most precious thing in the world that you have, namely your time with me, as all that goes on, well, Bionic Dick Cheney, he's in Post Hole, Alabama, or Priceville, Priceville, V-I-L-L-E, in Alabama is Vol. He's in Priceville, Alabama. And he's speaking at a fundraiser for a congressman named Robert Aderholt. It's 250. Get this. I mean, we're Democrats, and we go to our little functions, and we get a whole lot of Nabisco spray cheese and the little cocktail weenies in the tomato sauce and the dissolved grape jelly and the little meatball. We get a lot of that. And it's pretty tasty stuff. But if you're a Republican in Alabama and you want to support Congressman Robert Aderholt, they send you Bionic Dick Cheney. They charge you $250 a plate. And as Chris says, for the opportunity to, wait for it, sit with your feet in the dirt at a horse show arena. How poetic. And indeed, it is incredibly poetic. If you want to see Dick Cheney, you gotta get down in the horse pucky. Who is Robert Aderholt? Fair question. Robert Aderholt, now this goes back a ways, this is November the 18th, 2005. Robert Aderholt is probably one of those guys who is probably so sort of tensed up and tight right now you couldn't drive a 10-penny nail. Well, you know what? because he is just absolutely neck deep in the Jack Abramoff scandal. He needs a little bit of that good Republican loving from Bionic Dick Cheney. He's among the more than 30 congressional Republicans who signed letters on behalf of Jack Abramoff clients just days after Abramoff gave them money or hosted fundraisers for him. So, you know, Abramoff's kind of got other things on his mind right now. He's doing some sort of other stuff, so he can't really help with Congressman Adder Holt. Adder. What's happening in my noggin? Why does that generate? Why does this make sense that this guy would be named Adder and be Snake? Adder, Snake. They're at a horse barn. He's a horse's asp. Oh, whew, Bob, shame on you. Adder Holt, Adder, poisonous snake. That's them. According to the Associated Press, Representative Robert Adderholt, Alabama, along with more than two dozen other members of Congress, signed a letter to Interior Secretary Gail Norton. This is going to turn out to be a really famous letter. On February 27, 2002, helped lobbyist Jack Abramoff's clients. The lawmaker received about $1,000 from Abramoff, his lobbying partners, and tribal clients between $1,000? Nah, it's got to be more than that. I think we're minus a zero or two. Alabamians deserve better, said Democratic National Committee spokesperson Amaya Smith. And that's because Alabamians deserve better. They're scaring Congressman Snakeholt. And that's why Dick Cheney is down in the dirt of the horse poo in Alabama and down near Prossville. $250 a plate. To go and hang out with Bionic Dick. Inspiring, isn't it? You know, I can't make this stuff up. If I sat around and I thought, okay, I'm going to tell a story tonight about an Alabama congressman whose name is a synonym for poisonous snake, and he's going to be having a fundraiser with Dick Cheney in amongst the horse hockey. Couldn't get away with it. Couldn't get away with it. I mean, that wouldn't even make a good parody, because parody and satire has to have at least the patina of believability about it. Right? But it happens every day in Republican America. It happens all the time in Republican America. Just another day of filth and dirt and corruption in the Republican Party in America. And just in case you thought that maybe, I did that thing Friday night about the little boy 14-year-old groom in Georgia, and I said, well, you know, ha, 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 it's another one not happening in West Virginia. I'm so glad to be a West Virginian. Somewhere around February the 23rd, I think, we're having a very special guest here in the Mountain State. Now, this is how stupid the Republican Party thinks even Republicans in West Virginia are. And, you know, we've got a history of it. They came here, they told, in 2000, they told us Al Gore was going to get our guns, and the mouth-breathing, knuckle-dragging faithful went, yeah, he will! And so we, a bunch of people gave their votes to George Bush, and were it not for West Virginia, Florida wouldn't have mattered. Right. And then in 2004, they came here and they sent around a flyer and said, John Kerry's going to get your Bible, and a whole bunch of mouth-breathing, knuckle-dragging faithful said, yay, well! And so we got George Bush. Guess who's coming to West Virginia? Guess who's coming to support the campaign of Shelley Moore Cameltoe, or Capito? That's right. Carl Rove is coming to West Virginia. Blech. Let's go to the phones. Hey, you're head on. Who have I got?
Hey, Bob. Joe Vecchio.
Hey, Joe. How you doing?
Fine. How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing pretty good.
Was listening in tonight. Hey, calm down, man. Calm down.
No.
You know, I don't blame you for being mad. I get mad like that myself, but I started pulling my hair out, and it's just not worth it. You've seen The Honeymooners, right?
Oh, yeah.
Great show.
Love it.
There was an episode of that, and what you're talking about reminded me of this. There was an episode of that where Ralph, who, as you remember, was a bus driver, for those of people who never saw the show, he saved somebody's life on his bus. And these shady characters came to his place and said, hey, we'd like you to run for office, local office. And Ralph was like, oh, my goodness, I'm going to be running for office. This is wonderful. So he goes out there on, you know, in the street and trying to talk to people about stuff, and he gets all worked up, saying, you know, we got all these schools and all these police and all this and that. You know where it comes from? It comes out of your taxes. And the guy he was talking to said, of course, you idiot. Where do you think it's going to come from? And, of course, Ralph was flabbergasted. So then his next big deal was he had Norton with him with this big, big drum and the noisemakers and stuff like that. And whenever someone asked him a question, he motioned to Norton, who made all this noise while Ralph was talking. And then as soon as Norton stopped, Ralph would say, and that's what I'm going to do. You couldn't hear a word he said. And that's pretty much what these guys do. I mean.
Oh, yeah. Another one for the list. Somebody has got to quantify this list, Joe, of stuff that was put out there as comedy or not to be taken seriously that some Republican somewhere has seen and went, that's a good idea.
There's parody then. You know, it's like I had a post on my blog a while ago called Gene, You Ignorant Slut. And if you remember from the old Saturday Night Live.
Oh, yeah.
And they used to do with the point counterpoint with Dan Aykroyd and Jane Curtin. And whenever it got to Dan Aykroyd, it was like, Gene, you ignorant slut. And then he grew into this big tirade against Gene that had nothing to do with the subject at hand. You know, actually, they were both kind of doing it. Nothing had anything to do with what they were talking about. They were just insults back and forth. Back then, it was parody. Now it's par for the course.
Right.
You know, Bill O'Reilly, if you could go back in time and take a tape of the Bill O'Reilly show and take it back, you know, 30 or 40 years and play that, they'd think it was a joke. They'd think it was funny. This can't be serious. Somebody let this guy on the air?
Oh, well, you know, we had a perfect example of it last night with the Super Bowl, Joe.
In what sense? I saw the Super Bowl, but
Well, the halftime show.
Well, I didn't see the halftime show.
Yeah, with those, you know, I mean, Mick Jagger gets around pretty good for a Social Security recipient.
I made a joke about that in the chat room. I said, in keeping with their old guy's philosophy, next year they're going to have the body of Jimi Hendrix.
Well,
they're going to bring back Jimmy and Janis Joplin.
Well, that's the thing. You know, great minds think alike, Joe. Because I was, you know, I'm working along with you. I was thinking more like Jim Morrison.
There you go. Either way.
You remember when the Doors, and now this is actually kind of we would have been like little, but Jim Morrison was on the Ed Sullivan Show,
mm-hmm.
And they said, Jim, I understand you're going to play your hit there, Light My Fire. And we think it's a really groovy Hepcat kind of tune ditty. But would you mind not saying, baby, we can only get higher?
Yeah.
And they made up some completely bogus lyric for, you know, baby, we can go buy a bunch of bananas.
Oh, sure.
And Jim Morrison said, yeah, sure, man, sure, whatever. And then on live television, he ran up to the micro, you know, got right on top of the camera lens and said, get high. You know, get higher. It was kind of like that, only in reverse last night at the Super Bowl.
Or you know, you couldn't have Elvis shaking his hips.
Right. So last night at the Super Bowl, it was the exact opposite. Because of Janet Jackson's Nipple O' Doom a couple of years ago, you know, last year they were afraid that Paul McCartney was going to tear his shirt off. And this year, you know, Mick was showing his navel. But they, you know, they made plans for the Stones to do Start Me Up. You know, no big deal. Start me up. But it's got that line in it. Baby, you could, I'm going to say it. Baby, you could make a dead man, you could make a dead man come. And they delayed out that word. So can we just drop, you know, get a little thank you note, address it to Osama bin Laden, care of some cave in Pakistan. Dear Osama, you win. We've given up our constitutional rights. Mick Jagger can't say come on national television.
Who was it that had that? It was a post of Osama bin Laden that said, I'm still free, what about you?
Exactly.
And that's pretty much how I feel. And, you know, it's just kind of a shame because, you know, this is a corporate mentality. Corporations live in constant fear that people are going to get so outraged that no one's ever going to buy their product again. So, and everything they do is geared towards that. And then, of course, once you get up into the upper echelons, everybody, all the executives, they act out of fear. They're all worried about saying the wrong thing and losing their positions and stuff like that. So there's a great incentive to maintain the status quo. And, of course, what we have is a corporate presidency, a corporate administration. They run things exactly like a corporation does. They do
equally terrified, if not more so, Joe.
That's right. That may keep terrified of what's going to happen, keep everything in secret, because they know that if the public knew what the heck was going on, they wouldn't have any part of it. Operate through deception, and of course the whole purpose of it is to make the people at the top very, very rich and screw everybody else.
Right.
And that's been the basis of their admission. I'm not surprised, you know, you bring that stuff up with the 30 years ago. They've been doing this for 30 years. I mean, this goes back probably a little further to when Wallace was finished.
Yeah.
Political force. And they've been trying to get revenge for that sort of stuff for years. McCarthy. I mean, you had, and I hate everybody, Coulter, who was trying to defend Joe McCarthy. And that's what they, you know, they've been trying to do lately, along with other, you know, hated people. And I don't know. I go on and on, and it just gets me upset to see. But what gets me more upset is when I see people on the left fighting amongst each other.
Well, I mean, Joe, we've got just entire drawer file cabinets full of patents on circular firing squads.
Mm-hmm. And you see it in the blogosphere, and you see it, you know, the DNC the leadership. They slammed down Howard Dean. They were more responsible for killing off Howard Dean than the Republicans ever. Then the Republicans just left, because, you know, they knew also that whoever was going to win that primary was going to get the snot beat out of them anyway. But, you know, we just made them happy just watching Democrats do it to their own. And a part of that was that the Democrats have been in power for so long, the only power struggle they knew and understood was the power struggle within the party. They didn't need to operate outside of that, because if you ran the Democratic Party, the odds are you had a position in power in government. And, of course, the Republicans are operating under the same premise now, because if you want to be in power in government, you got to be a Republican. And the Democrats haven't changed that mentality. And that's why you got to get rid of the Liebermans. And I hate to say it, because he still does good stuff. You got to get rid of the Kennedys. You got to get rid of the Kerrys. You got to get rid of all these people who've got this mindset, and just replace them with new people who are not going to be afraid to fight, who are going to be partisan on the times when you need to be partisan, and be Americans when you need to be American. You know what I'm saying?
I do, Joe. I don't know. We might have a little bit of a disagreement here, simply because every now and then, and maybe I'm just getting sucked in by the dog and pony show, I generally think that Patrick Leahy, I mean, any man who will allow Dick Cheney to say to him what Dick Cheney said, and not just bloody his nose, loses respect in my book. And, you know, Bart Kopp always shows Patrick Leahy in that
Pink Tutu Brigade
quartet,
yeah,
of the Pink Tutus. You know, Lieberman and Kerry and Leahy, and I forget who the other one is, but, you know, the Pink Tutu Democrats. And yet there was Leahy today, and I was so proud of him, Joe.
But it's just inconsistent, though, and that's just the thing. I mean, I've heard Robert Byrd give some wonderful speeches on the floor denouncing, you know, some of the things the Republicans are doing, and then he turns around and he votes for Alito.
Oh, yeah. What?
And it's like, what is that? You know, be consistent, guys, you know?
Get on the same page, and, well, that, but you know what we're both complaining about here, Joe? We're complaining about a failure of leadership.
Yeah.
Where senators are concerned, we're complaining about the failure of, frankly, of Harry Reid.
Mm-hmm.
How did Harry Reid ever get to be, minority leader in the Senate? I mean, is it one of those rotating things? I mean, did he drop a quarter in a machine at Kroger's and turn the little crank, and instead of
seniority?
Yeah.
He's been around longer than anybody else. He hasn't been around longer than Byrd, I can't.
No, it's not seniority. I mean, well, you know, but back up. How in God's name did Tom Daschle get to be Senate Majority Leader?
Well, they knew how to play the game within the Democratic Party. I mean, that's the only answer I can give. They knew how. I mean, I deal with local Democrats here in DeKalb County, Georgia, and let me tell you something. The DeKalb County Democratic Party is the strongest Democratic Party in the state of Georgia, and we're in total disarray out here. We have a leadership who are nice people, don't get me wrong, but they're very much more concerned with maintaining their own positions than they are in really advancing a cause. I mean, nitpick over little things.
And, you know, it's so sad, Joe, because you're not the first person I've heard this from. You know, our good friend David in South Carolina bends over backwards for his local Democratic Party,
mm-hmm.
and has to beg them to do what's good for him. And you know, the Democratic Party is in complete and utter and absolute disarray from North Carolina all the way down through the Deep South. You know, I guess there's some sort of a party machine in place in Arkansas because they've managed to have a couple of Democratic senators there.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, what I don't understand is, yeah, okay, so the Republicans are on the ascendancy in the Deep South. Why does that mean that the Democratic structure has to just fall apart? And again, it comes back to leadership, I think, Joe, because... That means they're getting nothing from the national level.
And also, I think that's part of it. But also, I think that even on every level, a lot of Democrats still do not understand who their opponent is and how they fight. And there's too many of them that assume that if you give a little bit, they'll give something back, and they never do, and they never will.
No, you extend the olive branch, you draw back a bloody stump.
That's right, and they do that because that's the base of their power. They have to dehumanize us, and that's it's the same way they do with the Iraqis. Same way they do to anybody who they perceive as their enemy. They have to dehumanize them, because when you dehumanize somebody, it gives you leeway to do anything you want to them, because they're not human, and therefore they don't count.
Yeah, they're just animals.
Like the people in New Orleans, you know?
Yeah.
Just leaving there, we don't care, they don't count.
Well, you know, the white people with the loaves of bread and the six-packs, they're finding food. The black people are looting.
Looting it, exactly. And that's... You know, and the press is the same way. The press has their own little problems. They're not necessarily Republican, but they're caught up in their own little world, in their own little bubble. And most of them make huge amounts of money. I've said this millions of times before. Back in the day, back in my father's day, most people got their news from newspapers.
Sure.
And the beat reporters who wrote for the newspapers, even the big newspapers, generally made the same kind of money that people like my dad made, who was just a low-skill construction worker. Maybe a little bit more, but not that much more that they were out of the loop as far as what was going on in the real world was concerned. And so, therefore, that news had that kind of skew. It had that kind of understanding. Now most of the people get their news from television, and the people who are on television and the people who produce the news on television make gobs more money than the average working guy, the guy who works the same kind of unskilled labor that my father used to work, who was just a construction guy or worked for the city.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do.
And especially when you're talking about...
So you lose perspective.
Sure. Especially when you're talking about the Chris Matthews and the Katie Couric's and all the other people of the world. These people who make high six figures, seven figures, maybe even eight figures a year. And completely out of the loop as far as what's going on.
Yeah, and that's another conversation entirely, Joe. But what in heaven's name do you do with an eight-digit... salary?
I have no idea. And I really, I can't imagine having that kind of money. I mean, I talk about my expenses, my needs. I can get by on what I have right now on about $1,000 a month, and I would be very, very happy to get that.
Oh, hell, I'm broke as the Ten Commandments, and, yeah. And, you know, you worry from that end. But these people, you know, you give them eight digits worth of salary, and they may worry more than we do.
And you ever see the movie Casino? It was on the other day.
Yeah.
And I had the scene where I have this multi-millionaire, actually a billionaire, gambler who come into the hotel and he's stealing soap and towels. This is a guy who's worth billions of dollars and he steals. And people do that. When I used to deliver pizza, I used to hate going into the rich neighborhoods because the rich people never tip.
Yeah, they'll stiff you.
The poor people tip like crazy, which is probably why they're poor. They're less interested in the money. Say, hey, here's the guy who's working for a little, let's give him a couple of extra dollars.
I knew an older lady down in Atlanta one time, Joe, who would go into this local bakery. And, I mean, she was well off, very wealthy. And she would go in and, you know, if there were broken cookies, they would sell them at a discount. And if she went in and there weren't any broken cookies, she'd tell them to break some. I kid you not.
I shop in thrift stores because I have to. But you know what? I probably still would if I had a little bit of money. But if I had that kind of real money, I'd probably find some better way of doing it. And it's not just, we're talking about the Democratic leadership. It's not just them. It's the whole infrastructure of the left. And I talked about it in the report tonight. Nobody gives out any money. I mean, they've got the Heritage Foundation on the right, and they've got all these different groups. Michelle Malkin, Guckert, Jeff Guckert, Gannon, whatever the heck his name is.
They're privately financed.
Yeah, they never have to worry about whether or not their rent is going to get paid or where their next meal is coming from. Ben Birch has got to go out and beg people for money. And that's outrageous. He shouldn't have to do that. I think it's great that people donate. And, of course,
people
go out there and donate to him. Heck, donate to me, too, if you can afford it. But the thing about it is he shouldn't have to. I shouldn't have to. Bart Kopp. None of these guys should have to beg for a penny money. There should be people out there who say, hey, here are people who have some talent. Maybe they're a little raw. Maybe they need a little extra training or help. But we will provide this for them because they're fighting for the cause.
Yeah, that's why I just want to, every time I hear a right-winger talking about left-wing financier George Soros, I just want to hit him across the head with a tire iron.
And, you know, Soros only gave money to MoveOn after MoveOn had already proved itself.
Yeah.
So he didn't start that. He just gave them money after they showed. And really... And, you know, and I'm not really sure how much they've been doing, but how much have they been doing after that? I really haven't seen that whole lot.
I don't know, but they're $830,000 light with Robert Byrd. I know that.
Yeah, so, you know, I really don't know what they're doing with it. But the point is, Soros could have, but he hasn't done so, set up these foundations where they can look around and say, hey, they can go on the blogosphere. And there are several really, really good people in the blogosphere that they can say, let's put these people on a payroll. And you know something? We do it for a heck of a lot less than what these Republicans were doing.
Oh yeah, well we can get a hell of a lot of more bang for our buck, frankly.
Oh sure,
because but you know that...
because we're not in it for the money. I mean the money is important to me only to the extent of it keeps me housed, it keeps me fed. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And above and beyond that, I'm really not interested in going out and spending $300 on a steak dinner somewhere. You know, I'm happy going to a local Chinese joint.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you want the steak dinner. You know what my favorite steak dinner is, Joe? I go to the grocery store. I tell the guy how I want it cut. I bring it home. I fire up the grill. I throw them on there. And we all sit in the comfort of our own home. And we enjoy ourselves.
Do it yourself. Yeah, exactly. And I go out, you know, and I buy stuff from the store. You know what I was doing tonight? I was doing laundry, folding my own laundry and stuff. And I keep thinking... how many of these Republican guys have ever had to do that in their whole lives? I'm sure some of them have. I don't think they all grew up in rich families, but, you know, I kind of like doing that every now and then. I mean, I don't do it every day. If I had to do it every day, I think I'd probably go nuts, but I don't mind doing that every now and then.
I used to take great joy in ironing my dress shirts because I was real persnickety. I wanted enough starch in those dress shirts that if I should happen to collapse, the dress shirt would remain standing.
It would hold you up.
Yeah, exactly.
If you had a stomach injury, it would hold you up.
Exactly. We got to get out of here, Joe. Great conversation. Thanks so much.
Take care, Bob.
Later.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. And quick break. You know, it's the ice for the root beer thing. This is Head On. You know me. Dadgum, this is fun, isn't it? I'm Bob Kincaid. Phone number is 877-443-2366. Chime in if you want to.
the Democratic Party keeps moving closer and closer to where the Republican Party is in order to try to win elections. And I've watched how Democrats have consistently become more and more disgusted with the National Party because of the fact that they keep doing this. To no surprise, what did I find when I opened up the Washington Post? Senator Clinton crafts vague stance on war with eye to 2008. Senator Clinton, get a clue and, you know, get a backbone, for God's sake. You know, stand up and stand for something. I guess that's what really gets to me worse than anything, you know, anything else, is that when I vote for a leader, I want that leader to say to me, this is not a popular stand, and I understand this. This stand that I'm taking is going to polarize a lot of people, but you know what? I believe in what I'm doing, you know, and I will do what I can to carry it through regardless of my political future. This is Bruce Birch. I'd like to invite you to join me for All Things Reconsidered this Sunday at 10 p.m. Eastern. For connection information, visit allthingsreconsidered.org. That's allthingsreconsidered.org.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
All righty. 1 hour, less than 1 hour left to go. If you've got something to share, you've got about 50 minutes to share it. Quick email from our pal Sue on Big Coal River. Two things. I saw in the Charleston Gazette that Bill Frist was thinking about not running for the Senate because he wants to run for president in 08. Isn't he in trouble for selling stock in a family-owned hospital or something? Oh, yeah. Yeah, you got a little bit of that going on. Would he be allowed to run for president? If I had to testify before the Senate as an ordinary citizen, would I be required to take an oath? First of all, Sue, you're an ordinary citizen, and they don't want to hear from you. They don't like your kind, okay? But yeah, you'd have to take an oath. It's only when you're a sleazy, slimy, DUI, hiding, Bush family personal consigliere that you don't have to take the oath. You know, it's kind of a wasted effort, isn't it? Making a Bush consigliere take the oath of office. I mean, after all, why give him an oath? They're just kind of gonna lie when you get right down to it. I mean, isn't that the case? And this, speaking of emails, some wiseacre out there has put me on the Newsmax.com mailing list. I'm grateful because I love watching the sick, twisted machinations of the right wing. Breaking from Newsmax.com, Michael Moore makes sicko appeal. See, that's the name of Michael Moore's movie, Sicko. But basically, Michael Moore is out there asking, and here, by all means, for God's sakes, let me help, Mike. He's asking people who work for drug companies and HMOs and that sort of thing. He's offering, you know, anonymity, deep cover. But he's asking for people who work for these sleazy outfits to come forward and share information with the world about just how nasty the industry is. Tell you what, the phone number is 877-443-2366. If you want to get involved, please jump in. This is conversation radio. I could do 6 hours yammering away on my own. But if you've got something you'd like to share, please feel free to do so. And, of course, email to bob@headonradio.com. A couple of things right off the bat. Something I heard about and was briefly talked about
during the weekend weekend programs, Fourth Estate, and All Things Reconsidered. As you know, there were a number of protests that went down on the night of the State of the Union address. And in at least Greensboro and Cleveland, there were atrocities committed by the police that are just amazing in their scope. And we will get to that in just a minute. But, you know, I got to be good on my promise. We got a caller coming through here. Hey, you're head on. Who have I got?
You got Rick, Bob.
Hey, Rick, how you doing?
Hey, not bad. I guess, what are you, by yourself tonight?
Yeah, I'm soloing.
Oh, okay. I tuned in late, as always, so I didn't know what was going on. Oh, all right. Well, let me try to focus myself. So I was going to say hi to Agnes and everything. But
I'll tell her you said so.
Okay, thanks. So I don't know. Did you get my email?
Yeah, I did.
Oh, okay. So what do you think of the secret weapon? Do you think it's a strong possibility?
Well, wait a minute. Maybe I'm thinking about a different email. I tell you, well, you know, do it for the listeners anyway. I mean, lay it out.
All right. Well, the way I see it is that the only thing that Bin Laden or Al-Qaeda or Al-Qaeda or whatever you want to call them.
Oh, yeah. I did mention this earlier in the show. Please flesh it out. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, okay. Well, it's kind of redundant then.
No, not at all. I didn't. I barely touched it.
Oh, okay. Well, it's just the idea that, and if you think about this, as ludicrous as this sounds, I believe it would actually work for this turkey. All they would have to do is to get a bunch of United States phone books and then just start calling people, get a boiler room together, and then just start calling us. And then that would cause this gigantic drift net, drag net, whatever you want to call it, that they got going on with this wiretapping, to have to start investigating all of us. And then they'd have to investigate everyone we know and so on and so on. And they would never have a chance to be able to look at any real terrorists because they'd have to be investigating all of us.
That makes so much, you know, and we can take it a step further. We were reminded today by Attorney General Gonzalez, Rick. He reminded us that these are clever, crafty people.
Yeah.
They're not desperate human beings eating potted meat and crackers in caves in Pakistan. They're desperate, crafty people. Well, you know, they got the money. Why not hire a call center in India?
Well, exactly. I mean, you know, you got to remember, they got those incredible bunker catacombs under the mountains in Afghanistan. And, well, there's trucks parked in there and nuclear reactors, and they got sleeping quarters for hundreds of people. And it's just amazing. I know it's true because I watched Colin Powell put up the pictures.
Yeah, right. Yeah, right over there, behind that palm tree. Yeah. That's a weapons lab.
It was, you know, you can't deny it. It must be true. I mean, he did go to the UN and just and show the pictures and everything. Or were they drawings? Or were they cartoons? Maybe they were illustrations, models, perhaps.
Yeah. Artists' renderings for NASA.
Ah, there you go. Schematics.
Yeah.
Sure. At any rate, I know that sounds silly. But it occurred to me as I was watching the hearings and everything, and I just said, man.
Right.
You know, how easy would that be? I mean, if we're that pathetically paranoid, if that's all this is about, which I doubt, but if that were all this is about, that we have to be that vigilant and paranoid that every one of us is a suspected terrorist, then, of course, that would ultimately work and jam up the works so easily because, I mean, there'd be nothing they could do because they've left themselves no alternative to do anything else.
Well, they've manifested, and again, you're so correct because they're starting at the wrong end of the equation. They're starting with the idea that the problem is in the United States. The problem is, well, okay, I'm wrong, Rick. The problem is in the United States. It's in Washington D.C.
Well, yeah.
It's at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, and you're a computer guy. You're from PEBCAC?
Yeah.
Problem exists between keyboard and chair?
Yes, absolutely.
Between the Oval Office desk and the chair behind the Oval Office is the locus of America's problem.
Or, as we used to like to say when I was a truck driver, the nut behind the wheel.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, that's where our problem lies. Because, I mean, this is the, and, you know, I hope I don't bore people by constantly reminding them with this litany. This is the guy who was handed the Hart-Rudman report in January 22nd, 2001, that said, look, our airport security is bupkis. We're going to get hammered. And he passed it off, honest to God, he passed it off to the guy who wound up being Brownie's boss.
Well, yeah, and he was also Bush's caddy at Crawford.
Yeah, and it, well, and it goes on. So then Paul O'Neill, the Secretary of the Treasury, says, yeah, could we get a meet? I mean, and he says they're already talking about war with Iraq in March of 2001. And Richard Clark says, you know, can I get a meeting with you, Condi, honey? I mean, we got this little Al-Qaeda problem. And she says, you know, we're working on our Star Wars missile defense system. Sit down and shut up. I'll call you when I need you. It goes all the way up to August the 6th, 2001. Presidential Daily Briefing, Rick. You know what it was titled? Bin Laden determined to strike inside U.S. And Condi hands it to George and says, you know, this is a historical document. I'll be back. I got to get some shoes.
Well, yeah. And then just look at this latest U.K. memo that came out. We all know. I mean, you and I and everybody listening to this show really knows what's going on here to some degree, because nothing has anything to do with anything that we've been told. I mean, I got a few questions I'd like to be able to have somebody answer.
Under oath.
Yeah, for instance, why were we, and these are documented facts, why were we at the time of this alleged terrorist attack at the World Trade Center, why were we conducting a real-world exercise at the same time this real-world situation was going on, which was exactly the same scenario? That actually was going on. At the very moment, they were having an exercise, and that was exactly the same scenario. And people were, when air traffic controllers called up and said, now tell me, is this real world or is this exercise? What do we do? And then they couldn't get a straight answer from anybody. And then it was Dick Cheney who ordered everyone to stand down. Now, I'd like to have those questions answered, because they're real, they're documented, they happened. And this, you can't get around it by just saying, oh, you're a conspiratorialist, or you're paranoid, or some other crazy stuff like that, and brush me off, because you've still got to answer these questions, which are documented, they happened.
But we've found out something very important today, Rick, and that is, they won't answer questions.
Oh, yeah, I know.
I mean, I loved that exchange with Patrick Leahy. Are you doing that? Are you doing that? Are you doing that? Are you doing that?
Right.
And Gonzalez just sat there stone-faced.
I know. I mean, it's like, and the contempt that they have for anyone that even dares to ask them a question. I mean, this Gonzalez guy can't even keep a straight face. He's a lot like Bush. I mean, I think
he smirked all the way. You noticed that too?
Yeah, he's like, I just can see him and Bush gahoffing it up and high-fiving and butt-slapping each other at, like frat boys, because I believe they are just thick as thieves on these issues. And they both have that smirk. It's like he's straining to keep the smirk off his face, but he can't do it. And it's not just, it's a contemptuous smirk.
Yeah, it's like, oh, you chumps, if you only knew.
Yeah. Yeah, and I see it, you see it, and I know, you know, we can't be the only ones, you know. And then to be able to say, like, well, I'm not answering these, I can't do it, because then it would betray the program and expose it, and you're going to have to take our word for it. I mean, that's the whole thing. I mean, that we are expected to defy every logic in the world that we know better about. We are supposed to say it's a good thing to have the fox watching the hen house. And when you come up to ask questions, he's sitting there picking feathers out of his teeth and telling you there's no problem. There's no problem. Trust me. It's just fine, Mr. Farmer. You know, I mean, I don't even know how people who are just, for whatever reason, are in this ether in this country. I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's just a deep state of denial or, I mean, I'm sure it's broken off into factions. We all know that there's a whole bunch of these wannabe neo-Nazis that are running around, or who want this kind of total horrendous police state so they can exercise their bigotry without any reservation whatsoever. And then there's another whole group of people who are, for one reason or another, if it doesn't contain a ball or a score, then it's not worth talking about. And that's an unfortunate group, because they're the ones that will either not vote or will vote on the soundbite. And they're bad for America either way they go.
Well, sure they are.
I would prefer they don't vote.
You know, I sat down yesterday, Rick, and I did the Super Bowl thing. We had a nice pot of homemade soup, great on a cold winter's day. Sat down, watched the Super Bowl, had some cornbread, opened a beer. But you know, it's not a life changing experience. I used to, you know, when I would commute, I would listen to ESPN radio when I had that alternative to Rush. And, you know, it was but I used to, you know, because I'm a radio guy, I'm thinking, you know, how could you possibly do this job?
Oh, yeah, every day, day in and day out. I used to hate to do this damn scores when I was DJing, you know?
Yeah, here's a partial score, Slippery Rock 7.
Yeah, one was, you know, 4-1-10, and this one wiped that one, and you have to use all these stupid adjectives.
Yeah,
and I just hated it. Yeah, I just hated it. I hated doing it. I'd rather do the weather than this stupid sports sport, you know? But that was probably...
But there are more people that and I don't mean to sound like some sort of elitist snob. I really don't. But there are more people who hang on those scores than hang on... you know, how many people get as frustrated as, say, you or I do driving down the road with a 5-minute newscast from, you know, pick your network?
Oh, sure. You know, I know exactly what you mean. These guys will tell you the size of the guy's jersey, but they don't know who their congressman is. You know, and that is so tragic and so...
Yeah, but if that congressman was traded for a player to be named later?
Well, yeah, then they'd pay attention. Like, everybody knows that poor cat that got killed by friendly fire there. What was his name there? Over in Afghanistan, a football player?
Pat Tillman, yeah.
Everybody but me, right? But, I mean, but they all know him. I mean, he's
yeah, but they know him, but 90% of them don't know the dirty, rotten, awful truth that lies behind his ignominious death.
Well, yeah, I know. They're still selling him as a poster boy to those that don't know as the American hero. That,
you know, they don't know that his brother showed up at the funeral and just delivered a jeremiad against George Bush.
Yeah,
they don't know. They just miss out on all of that.
And I just can't help but believe it's willful denial, because I mean, you wouldn't believe the amount of people that I know that won't vote, and they're working at Big Ten Tires, and they're working at the local Swifties or Juniors or whatever you want to call them.
Yeah,
they're busting their butt over at some restaurant, you know, putting out food. They're doing all of these jobs and they don't vote. They just don't do it. And when you try to convince them that it's in their best interest, they won't have it. And then I have a whole lot of friends that don't dare go by a polling site because some of them got, you know, they might be wanted for child support or something else, you know. So they don't want to go near the place because they say, no, they'll check my ID. And I couldn't tell them that they won't anymore because down here in Florida they do.
Yeah.
I mean, we've got certain precincts down here where the cops are right outside with a stone face.
Yeah, that encourages the franchise,
yes,
doesn't it?
Of course, it only depends on what side of town you're on, of course.
Well, yeah, not on the gated community McMansion side of town.
Right, right. Yeah. So, I mean, so there's a variety of reasons why they stay away from it, but the most unfortunate thing that they have in common is that they believe it won't make a difference. And, again, this is a very difficult thing to tell them otherwise these days with Diebold.
Right.
And the people like that election stooge that we had here, that woman, or the one in Ohio. I mean, it's gotten to the point now where you literally have to say, well, maybe your vote won't count, but you should at least give it a whirl.
God.
You know, that's how bad.
Yeah, well, everybody needs to go and have a read at bradblog.com. You reminded me of something, Rick. Brad Friedman, our good friend, broke something today. There was an election in Ohio, you know, no presidential stuff, and the Diebold machines went.
Well, that's good news.
Yeah, they overvoted. What's the, you know, how do the wingnuts answer that one? Remember with the butterfly ballot? What's the matter with those old people in Florida? Are they too stupid to vote?
Right, right. Like everybody down there wanted Pat Buchanan, for Pete's sakes. Most of them are Jewish.
Yeah. Yeah, they're going to vote for no Holocaust, Pat. Yeah,
well,
sure.
Yeah,
well, even Pat Buchanan came out and said, you know, these people didn't vote for me.
Well, yeah, but Pat's father died in the war. He fell out of a guard tower.
Oh, brother. Hey, Rick, I got a roll here. I got to put another call on.
Hey, not a problem. Keep going strong. I can't wait to hear you interrupted by a toothpaste ad. I'll see you later, buddy.
Later.
All right.
Bye now.
Bye.
Hey, you're head on.
Hello? Just a minute. Got to fix it. There you are.
Oh, you got me?
I got you.
Okay. I've been wanting to say for days and days that our country was founded for an informed public.
That's right.
And we don't have that anymore. We have a huge machine, military machine, that is just too much for some people to pass up. And the public is not going to stop them. And what's the sense in listening to these hearings if Gonzalez has not been sworn in?
Oh, it was an exercise in futility. I recognize that. But still, you know, when you get a chance to watch the devil talk,
yeah,
you want to you kind of want to know what he's going to say.
Well, I've been feeling that way for a long time, but I've gotten to the point where it just comes down to every time you turn around, you get un-American activities, and it, after a while, it just turns into the same thing. We
look at the budget that Bush is introducing, has introduced. The military budget continues to grow. It's our military budget is greater than like the next 10 nations combined.
Yeah.
Who the hell are we afraid of?
Yeah.
But you know, where are we balancing the budget? Why, we're balancing the budget on the backs of poor people. The Medicare's taking the whack. Bush is getting ready to start going around the country again. The quote is there. He said it in Nashville. It still rings in my head. This should be like Monica and the rope line was with Bill Clinton. He stood in Nashville and he said, I'm going to turn 62 in 2008. Ain't that convenient? But you know, the thing is, us 62-year-olds, we've been promised too much. We've got too many entitlement programs for us baby boomers.
Yeah. It
drives me nuts.
All I can think of is these guys are planning on building themselves monster compounds to live inside with a bunch of naked natives running around eating dirt.
Right.
You know, that's where this is all headed. And we need to call up all our Democratic representatives and say, you know, just don't go to these hearings. Create a ruckus. We've got to start thinking outside the box, because you do things according to Hoyle, according to how it's always been done, and these guys have got a lock on it.
Well, that's one of the and I didn't get your name when you signed
CB,
on.
CB, as in Citizens Band.
Oh, okay, yeah. Great, CB. One of the problems is that, you know, you mentioned Hoyle. I think more in terms of the Marcus of Queensbury rules. You know, that's the one where you stand up like John L. Sullivan with one fist out in front of the other, and you know, you're wearing your trunks that come up to the, you know, up to your sternum, and you throw punches, you know, in very gentlemanly fashion. Our side has been, you know, we fight by the Marcus of Queensbury rules. The other side comes up and does that scene from Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. You know, no knives. No fight, no kick, you know, no kicking in the groin, no rabbit punching, and doing every one of those as they say it. And the next thing you know, you're laying on the ground coughing up blood. That's where we are.
Well, if we want our Constitution back, if we want our country back, it's got to be a knockdown, drag out. I just don't understand why everybody in the United States is not out in the streets screaming, knocking things over. Just in the outrage of what's going on right in front of our noses with this monster, fat, sleeping giant, and they're just rolling right over the top of it.
Well, but that's part of the process. You got to understand, if the people of the United States ever did mobilize and understood for a moment what is being done to them, God only knows what would happen in this country. That's why the mega churches exist. That's why the Bush series runs on Saturday and the Nextel Cup runs on Sunday. That's why, you know, that's why hockey, a game that is played on started out being played on frozen ponds. That's why they play the Stanley Cup in June. Anything to keep our focus away from our civic responsibilities.
Yeah. And you know, back in 2000, I kept hearing everybody say, oh, what does it matter who gets elected, you know, Gore or Bush?
There's
a couple of rich boys. And I'm screaming, going, it matters a lot. One's got an IQ, the other one doesn't. Wouldn't you like to have your president have an IQ? You know?
Well, yeah, I heard that, and I know there's a lot of folks that were pro Nader in 2000, and I don't want to get into that again.
Yeah.
But where did we hear that more from than anywhere else? You didn't hear Gore saying there was no difference between him and Bush, and frankly, assuming that he was able to string the whole thought together, you didn't hear Bush saying there was no difference between him and Gore. You heard Ralph Nader standing out there saying there's no difference between those two, and
right. There
was a difference. There was a very real difference.
And that right there is a killer. I still hear it, you know, when I start talking about candidates and, you know.
Well, and I am guilty. I am guilty sometimes of looking up and saying, hey, it's all wrestling.
Yeah.
You know, and when the mad brawler and the red raider go out of the ring after the bell's rung, you know, they go back into the dressing room and they both crack a beer and laugh about it. You cannot convince me that that does not go on. I know it does. They up on Capitol Hill, they slap each other's backs and say, well, you know, you won that one.
Yeah, all the laughing while they were doing the cloture vote on the Alito thing the other day was just it made my nerves just scream every time I heard giggling on the floor.
Well, and I mean they were chuckling along and giggling today in the Gonzalez hearings.
Yeah.
You know I'm glad you reminded me of that because there is a vote going on in the Senate and there was debate taking place in the Senate today. Russ Feingold looked at Arlen Specter and said, you know, I need to get out there. I want to speak on the floor about this asbestos bill. I don't know. Are you familiar with this?
No.
Well. There is a so-called asbestos bill. Feingold wanted to get to the floor to speak on it, and Specter said, I tell you, we're probably not going to get to you for another 6 or 7 hours. You better stay here, because Specter is in favor of this asbestos bill. Feingold is opposed to it. It's called an asbestos bill, but you know what it is?
Mm. What?
It's a Halliburton $600 million giveaway.
See...
You hate me, don't you? Hate me.
That's what I'm talking about. These guys have figured out a way to get control of all of our assets and wring the people dry.
Are you familiar with Libby Montana? You ever hear about that?
Libby Montana. Is that
that's the town in Montana where criminal charges were filed against W.R. Grace and Company. They not only gave asbestosis to all their workers, they gave asbestosis to everybody in Libby, Montana.
Yeah.
W.R. Grace is a wholly owned subsidiary of the Halliburton Corp.
Oh, jeez.
So we don't have the money to fully fund No Child Left Behind. We don't have the money to fully fund Medicare, for God's sakes, or the money that needs to flow downhill to the states for Medicaid. We don't have that money, CB, but we got $600 million to throw into a bailout for Halliburton, who ought to be standing up in the dock, in the court system, being sued as part of a class action by about a million Americans.
So... Well, I'm back to my original point, is the Democrats or whoever, you know, maybe just a bunch of freelance human beings who listen to you on the radio should get together about thinking outside the box, you know, how to make this change. If you can't get the Senate to put the Attorney General under oath for breaking the Fourth Amendment, if you can't get that, you don't have a United States.
I think you're very close to correct.
Exactly. And nobody will say, all right, let's do something unprecedented. You know, everybody's trying to stick within the rules and the precedent.
Yeah, but even the people who want to get out and do something, and I applaud direct social action. I'm all for marching. I'm all for sitting in. But what we need right now is some focus. And frankly, one of the things that I'm most passionate about is this idea of publicly funded electoral campaigns.
Yeah,
I think that stands a chance of changing American politics more so than any other thing.
If we can get the vote to actually work ever again,
Well, yeah, that's kind of critical, too. But when you see what's going down, like I mentioned with the article with Brad Friedman at Brad Blog today.
Yeah.
It's not even a secret anymore. These Diebold machines, the ESNS, the Sequoia, none of this stuff can be trusted. The
exactly.
fact of the matter is, you mentioned, you know, we love the sports, you know, we love being distracted. The other thing we love is instantaneous gratification. You know, we treat our election CB just like the Super Bowl, and we want to know who won the minute the polls close.
Yeah.
The nation of Canada counts its ballots in a day, and they're all paper and pencil. The entire United Kingdom has an election, counts its ballots all in a day with paper and pencil.
So
we are enamored of things that go ping. And as a consequence, we can't just have an election and spend some money, you know, the little tiny pencils you get on the golf course for marking your scorecard. No, we can't buy a few boxes of those and pass them out at the precincts and some sheets of paper. Oh, hell no. Our friend up in Pittsburgh working on election reform, they're looking at it. They've got a $15 million grant for election machines under Help America Vote Act. And you know what? It's not that they have to spend it.
Right.
And you can't buy $15 million worth of copy paper and little golf course pencils. I mean, the Republicans want to talk about being fiscally conservative. How in God's name do you call the Help America Vote Act fiscally conservative? It's not.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So, publicly funded campaigns and paper ballots.
I'm with you on that one, but it may be too late if the president next is going to declare, well, we're at war, and so there aren't going to be any elections. And he can do that. He has a constitutional right to do that because he's the commander-in-chief.
He has an executive order that allows him to do
that. Yeah.
Yeah, I know it's the cold sweat in the middle of the night kind of thing, but I mean there are places we can work. There are opportunities to direct our energy more than just doing the thing from network and standing outside and screaming. We can focus our energies. Clean elections, publicly funded elections, and paper ballots. We need to start absolutely militating for them, you know, like day and a half ago.
Well, I've been screaming for them, and
well, the next, you know, your next gig is to end your ghettoization, end your silence, and you know, start talk. This is the metaphor that I constantly use. Start talking about it in the grocery line.
Yep, I do.
You know, when the lady behind you is going, I can't believe that Paris Hilton.
Right.
You know, that's a great opening. To look at her and say, can you believe that Congress wants to end the estate tax for her? And bang, next thing you know, you're in a conversation.
Yeah.
CB, so good talking to you. I hope we'll hear from you again.
Well, I think you will. This is my first time I ever called a radio show.
Oh, bless your heart. Are you okay? Blood pressure's all right? You know.
Yeah. I've been battling a headache all afternoon, probably induced by Congress. So it's a little hard for me to talk, but
I understand.
I'm okay.
Hey, you did a great job. Do take care.
Okay, bye, Bob.
Bye now. And let's see, who have we got? Hey, you're head on.
Hey, it's Kenneth Harris.
Hey, Kenneth, how you doing?
Good, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for calling the program.
Oh, more than happy to.
What can I do for you?
Oh, I'm sorry. I should have let you know who I was. I thought maybe someone else had told you.
No, you're on the air.
Okay.
So I don't have a producer tonight, so I just had to come straight to you. You're one of the Greensboro 7?
Yes, sir.
Let's talk.
All right. I just wanted to call in. I know you had given a lot of airtime to us and the calls and you know exactly what happened in downtown Greensboro on the 31st. Just wanted to get a chance to speak with you and you know.
Well, just since we can't, I don't like to make assumptions about who knows what, Kenneth. If you don't mind, run us through a little bit of background about what went down on the 31st, so everybody who's listening can know.
Yes, on the night of the 31st, there was a World Can't Wait rally in downtown Greensboro that, you know, very briefly was a peaceful march through the streets of downtown Greensboro. There was no trouble. It did come off the sidewalks and into the streets, but on a Tuesday night in downtown Greensboro, we maybe saw three cars. By the end of the rally, the police force, which started out to be two cops on bicycles, had turned into about 30 cops, and I'm not sure how many cars that involved. We returned to the beginning site where the rally started, and everyone was there celebrating and speaking with each other, and there were still drums being played and enjoying the fact that in one of the scariest towns to do something like this in, being Greensboro, North Carolina, that we had a successful march.
Yeah, because that is kind of a creepy place to try to pull the whole political dissent thing.
It is very tough, and I couldn't be more scared right now for the position that we are in and the position that our community is in. It's very scary.
Well, you guys got sort of roughed and cuffed, didn't you?
Yes, this all starts right now. We, at this point from the story, we noticed a guy dressed, in street clothes with a video camera, and he was walking down the street where all the cars for the rally attendees were parked, going down the backs of them and videotaping every single license tag within less than a foot of the cars for the whole length of the street. I noticed it, and a few others noticed it, and walked towards this man. At least two or three cars, distance from us. And, ask him what he's doing, why he's doing it. After he wouldn't reply, wouldn't make eye contact, we said, Are you a police officer? And he continued to film the cars. So we moved down the street with him as he progressed and continued to ask him what he's doing, why he's doing it, and is he a police officer? Still no response. So to prevent this from happening to these innocent, attendees.
Well, and let's slow down for a second there. You weren't, there's an old sort of, thing like hookers have promulgated and old drug dealers and so forth that if you ask a cop, is he a cop, that he's under some sort of magical obligation to tell you he's a cop. I'm guessing from what you're saying that you're asking this question not from that standpoint, but rather one of personal and public safety. I mean, this guy could have been a rapist. This guy could have been you're in North Carolina. This guy could have been a gun-toting freak who was going to start mowing down young people.
And, Bob, actually what it turns into is that it was a gun-toting freak. We proceeded because, we were very scared and concerned as to why this guy wanted the information from all these people. And as this man that we have in office has told the country to do, we're supposed to look out for the community and report and, if not, stop, prevent any suspicious activity.
You're not an American if you're not on the alert against Al-Qaeda.
Exactly. So, we're looking to prevent and pretty much right at this point just find out why this person is doing it. So we went and stood in front of the license tags of the cars across the street before this man came across the street after he finished filming the first row of cars. At this point, he came up to one of them, one of the people out there with us, and told him to get out of the way, still not identifying himself as anyone. At this point, he put the camera in his coat, closed up the camera, put it in his coat. I guess he had a sling on the camera so it could hang. And shouldered through a gentleman that was standing blocking the license tag of a car and said, get out of my way before I knock you the F out.
Yeah, brother.
Obviously not a cop at this point, right?
I'm guessing no.
Moves on to the next car and shoulders that person out of the way.
Now, when you say shoulders, I mean like lowers his shoulder and, checks him?
This gentleman is about 6'4" and probably 240 pounds. So he did not use his hands, but, actually shouldered us. I don't know that I can't recall if he leaned down to do so, but, aggressively moved us out of the way without actually using the palms of his hands. And then he came to the car where I was standing. There's a few people very close to me also behind the car. I just happened to be directly in front of the license plate. He, shoulders me out of the way, and as I turn away to walk away from the situation, he stops in his tracks, steps back, and pulls my sweatshirt over my head and hits the right-hand side of my head repeatedly as I'm stuck in the sweatshirt. Yes.
That sounds like something out of a mob movie.
You're exactly right. And at this point, it is a mob movie. I was finally able to back out of my sweatshirt by trying to walk backwards with my head covered up, just getting nailed right and left with this guy's blows.
This guy's just pummeling you?
Yes. I couldn't move because I had my arms, the way he pulled the sweatshirt over my head, I was pretty much debilitated.
Yeah, it was like a straitjacket at that point.
Yeah. And I finally slip out of it. By the time I look up, I see him drop my sweatshirt on the ground, pulls a gun from his waist, has it sideways in my face like the movies. And
oh, you mean, I mean, it's pointed at you, but it's like he's got it homeboy style?
Yeah, it is in my face, halfway upside down, and all I can see is the silver of the barrel 2 inches from my face at the most. He's yelling at me, get the F on the ground, get this and that, and at this point, everyone tries to flee the scene because we're scared of this thug that's getting ready to shoot one of us.
Still no badge.
No badge, no nothing.
No, you're no, you're under arrest, no...
No, this entire night we were never under arrest, supposedly. We were never read our rights. We were never told we were being arrested and never told why we were being arrested until we got in front of the magistrate after 9 hours of being held in the jail. At this point, while everyone's fleeing, that's when the uniform officers come running, tackle people to the ground. Every officer that was running had their guns drawn, yelling and screaming. I mean, this, if anything...
I'm just trying to be fair here, Kenneth, okay?
Oh, no,
had anybody laid a hand on a cop?
No. This all was started when, I mean, or the fiasco portion of it started when the sweatshirt was pulled over my head and this guy began to hit me. And then obviously when the gun was drawn, the situation escalated very rapidly and people tried to escape the situation. I couldn't. I had to stay where I was, obviously, because the gun was directly in my face to begin with. And within a matter of seconds, people were getting tackled. Two girls were maced who were not arrested. Every officer running had their guns drawn, yelling, screaming. It was a police riot and out of control. I mean, there was absolutely no protocol, you know, adhered to in this situation.
This is astonishing. I mean, I'd heard a little bit about this, but I've got this thing, I've got this image running through my head, Kenneth, that... far be it for me to lecture or, you know, you're lucky to be alive.
We are all very lucky to be alive. Actually, we went back to the scene and reenacted it, or not reenacted, but stood where we were all assaulted. And it almost brought tears, you know, brought a lot of us to tears because we were able to remember at the very moment that we thought we were going to die.
Jesus.
And for me, it was when the barrel of the gun was 2 inches away from my head with this angry, yelling, very large man in front of me who nobody knows who he is. It's a very scary...
Do we know who he is now?
Yes. Once we were all in the van, handcuffed, he came to the back of the van and said, here's my effing badge. And
I'm guessing he didn't say effing.
No, he didn't say effing. I've used effing a few times.
I appreciate that. So that at that point, what, it was a taunt?
Yes, it was.
Were these your cars?
No, these were, we'd actually walked there, and we were just trying to protect the interests of the people involved. This was a peaceful event, and nobody there deserved to be tracked by some stalker, rapist, potentially anything. You name it.
Yeah, the dude, pardon me, I'm not trying to take you off track, Kenneth.
No.
Gay bar, New Bedford, Massachusetts. Dude walks in, orders two drinks, and starts hacking people on the top of the head with a hatchet last weekend.
Oh, my gosh.
That's this guy. I mean, it could be. I mean, do you see what I'm saying?
Exactly. I couldn't believe that the police, had this been an officer, had we known it was an officer, we would say, okay, well, this is definitely not worth involving ourselves anymore.
You said it started out with two cops on a bicycle.
Beginning of the march. Yeah,
yeah. Were you flipping him off, or, you know, hey, pig, or, I mean.
No, There were no taunts in this. That's why it was so successful. There was a combination of different interest groups, and everybody was there for this united cause.
How many people all told?
Between 160 and 200.
Okay.
I can't give you a more accurate number than that, but that is, despite either way, it's a very large crowd.
So this all turned out to be Greensboro PD, right?
Yes. And actually, the gentleman who did not identify himself and then finally did, the undercover police officer that assaulted myself and several other people, is the head of a gang and terrorism task force in the Greensboro Police Department who is under investigation right now because of a racial...
The Black Book.
Exactly. The Black Book. The the police chief was just fired from this for condoning and supporting this department.
For people who don't know, racial profiling going on against black and other ethnic minority cops within the Greensboro Police Department.
Yes, sir.
And exactly. This guy was involved with that?
Yes, he is the head of that department.
Holy cow.
And just that whole, you know, it just goes to show that the Greensboro Police, and especially this department, have this sickening affinity for violence.
Well, but back up for a minute, Kenneth, if I may, please.
No problem.
Do not assume that this is a problem that is localized or specific to the Greensboro PD.
Oh, this is a
this all, you know, whether it's torture at Abu Ghraib or whether it is domestic wiretapping, assaulting young people in a peaceful march. Every last bit of this, Kenneth, I hope you get this. Every last bit of this rolls from the top down. You guys had this happen to you. It was maybe a couple of months ago. A young lady who happened to be a vegan was protesting outside of Heavenly Ham in Atlanta when she caught somebody videotaping them and walked over and asked him who he was. She got arrested. The guy turns out to be the Homeland Security liaison of the Atlanta PD to the Department of Homeland Security. So, you know, I wouldn't be surprised to find out that this this creep was something similar.
This is just this is the Bush regime and the Patriot Act as a cloud that has now become fog and weighed us down on our shoulders. And we can't see in it, we can't move in it, because we're scared to do anything. And that is what they're aiming for.
Well, yeah, because they're, I've said this, you may not be that familiar with this program, but I've repeatedly said, and maybe people are tired of hearing it, I hope not, because it needs to become a mantra. This is a nation in which the leadership, the Bush administration, is more afraid of the American people than any so-called Islamic terrorist that exists on the face of the planet today. You are a greater threat to the Bush administration by your mere willingness to stand up and object peacefully than Osama bin Laden could be with 100 airplanes. And that is pitiful, and it's sad, and it's un-American.
It is. I don't know a better way to put it. It's just, I don't know how many times we have to mark these incidences before it becomes mainstream and people begin to understand that this is violence against our community.
Well, the way that they've managed to keep this from becoming mainstream is their insistence on the so-called all-volunteer military, or what I like to call the poverty draft. That's how they've kept it from being mainstream. If as long as the soccer moms and the NASCAR dads can go to the Walmart and buy a $6.95 yellow ribbon magnet and throw it on the back of the gas-guzzling SUV and say, "Look, I support the troops," then they're out of the loop, and they're out of the process.
Exactly. I don't know which America they think they're fighting for, but I'm fighting for the real one that existed before all of this came into place.
So, we've only got a couple of minutes left, Kenneth. Let me ask you: are you contemplating legal action?
We are. We don't know which direction we're going to go with it. Yeah, that's about all I can.
Well, yeah, I don't want you to give anything away, but. Do please. It may be the last place on earth that you can assert your rights. And that's on its way out, too. We've got to hit it. Thank you so much for calling in. Thank you for sharing your story. I hope you'll update us. I'd love to hear more of this from some of the other folks who were involved.
We'll definitely try to get involved. It's a tough time here, and our time is going to be very minimal in the coming days and months. But we will be more than happy, and if not, get someone.
Yeah, please do. And the email's real simple. It's bob@headonradio.com. Just let us know, because I feel comfortable in saying, Kenneth, that you have the support of the great vast majority of this audience.
Well,
we want to stand with you. We want to help you in any way that we possibly can.
And thank you guys so much. And if anybody has any way they can help or wants to know how they can help, they can contact us all at Greensboro number 7. greensboro7@gmail.com.
Greensboro, the numeral 7, greensboro7@gmail.com.
Yes, sir.
All right. Thank you so much, Kenneth.
Thank you guys so much. Keep up the good fight.
Going to try. You take care.
Bye.
Bye now. All right. I don't see anything else I would say would be gilding the lily at this point. See what we're up against? The show tonight was produced. See how habits happen? I produced the show tonight. Our good friend Brian Reznor announced the program. Our studio setup was engineered by Randy Kerbway. Our good friend Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org maintains the stream of this program as well as the archives of this and many other fine programs. He's got a fundraiser going on right now. Remember, Ben never sends you a bill. It's up to you to do the right thing. And we also, I sometimes forget, but I always want to thank Shelby at RadioPower.org. We appreciate the rebroadcast of this program from 3 to 6 Eastern Time every afternoon. The show is brought to you tonight and every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Remember, they're building the American dream. And always, 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 RMR, it's all for you.